Welcome back to Awakened Exchanges. I'm your host, Jay Rich, and this is our second holiday episode of 2020. This whole month, I'm focusing on fun things that bring me, and hopefully you, joy. Our first episode was with Nick Hinton, and we had quite the fun conspiratorial talk. I took a bit of a swing in passions for this week and went to fantasy sports. I've been a fan of them since I first saw them emerging during my freshman year of college, which, if you must know, was the 99-2000 school year. Basketball was always my sport, but I admit that fantasy football can be a whole lot easier to manage with limited time. This week's guest will give us a look at the life of a professional fantasy sports analyst. I'm still trying to lock in the last few guests for this month, but if everything goes as planned, we should still have a very special Christmas Eve episode. Stay tuned for more information. I spent all of last month doing my best to be grateful for everything that presented itself in my life. It seems like that should be an easy thing to do, but it's even easier to get bogged down in the everyday drudgery, especially as we endure more lockdowns and socially distanced holidays. I've been battling to keep the guests I have already scheduled, as well as trying to build our audience and expand our reach. Not surprisingly, the holidays haven't made it any easier to lock in guests. I'm continuing to do my best to assure that we don't go quiet and keep this podcast building its momentum instead of sliding backwards, but this is where I need your help. We've gotten nothing but positive reviews, but there's just not nearly as many of them as our downloads would have you believe. I want to hear back from you. Yes, you specifically, and find out what we can do to help spread the word. Do you know of a guest you'd like to hear and would like to put us in touch with? Do you want some stickers to share with friends? What would get you more invested and excited to hear from us each week? I am doing this for the audience, and your excitement is extremely contagious. I want to hear from you so together we can build this into a show that you're as excited to see in your feed come Thursday morning as I am to put it there for you. We're in this world together, and I hope that we can use this feedback loop as our way to amplify our creative energies and make this podcast, if not the world, a little more fun and accessible. I hope you're all even a fraction as grateful to be listening as I am to have you here. Let's accentuate the positive and remember to be grateful every day. I'm most definitely grateful for this week's guest, Andrew Wiggins. He's probably most known for his work on Establish the Run, the year-round highest quality fantasy sports analysis. He took time away from his schedule to visit with us and give us an honest, open look into his life, as well as a look inside an industry that many of us have had fantasies about dominating. He talks a lot about recognizing our luck and remembering to be grateful for the wins as well as the losses, as we roll with the punches thrown through life. Andrew was a pleasure to speak with, and he seems like a genuinely gregarious individual. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Before we get to the interview, here's a brief rundown of our sponsors. As always, I want to thank all of you personally for your support. Just listening and sharing this podcast with your friends gives me a reason to keep providing the best content that I can. If you have the means and would like to contribute personally, please don't forget about our Patreon page, where you will get access to exclusive content and deals just for our dedicated fans. There are already 3 bonus videos available as I record this, and more are on the way. As for our other sponsors, Awakened Vapes was the first of the Awakened brands and has been helping you modulate your high with CBD-only, high-terpene vape products since 2019. Genesis Farms has been making the highest quality medicinal RSO, among many other amazing products, starting with the medical community back before 2010. And last but not least, the Caramel Corn Company, bringing you caramel corn the way it was meant to be. And remember, if you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe to us on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Also, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I know every podcast says it, but that's because it really does help spread the word and visibility. You can also support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter. All right, now, stay tuned, and thank you for listening to Awakened Exchanges. Genesis Farms was founded on the belief in cannabis's ability to heal.
Genesis Farms is more than a brand. They're a compassionate community of like-minded folks that generate top-quality cannabis products made with love and care. Community outreach is always on their mind, and their partnerships with Grow for Vets and Parents for Pot was just a beginning to what they hope to accomplish in the coming years. You can find their products on the best dispensary shelves across the state of Oregon. Their RSO is the most consistent quality in the state, their tinctures are second to none, and their personal massage oil will have you and your partner both coming back for more. Find them on Facebook, Instagram, and ask for them in your local dispensary today. Don't forget to listen to Sean's interview right here on Awakened Exchanges soon.
Our new sponsor is the Carmel Corn Company. Carmel corn the way it was meant to be. Made from premium ingredients in small, handcrafted batches, and completely gluten-free. The flavors include original, roasted cashew, salted almond, mixed nut, white morsel macadamia, spicy sriracha, peanut butter, butterscotch, and my personal favorites, raspberry caramel apple and chocolate drizzle. I can't say enough how delicious this caramel corn is. I wouldn't buy it from any other source. You can find Carmel Corn Company products for sale at Portland area market of choice locations, and when it gets stocked back up, maybe it'll be online again. Visit www.carmelcorncompany.com and get more information today. Remember, buying local supports small businesses and keeps your money building your community.
Last but not least, Awakened Vapes has been bringing you some of the highest quality CBD vape pens since ringing in the new year of 2019. I became passionate about cannabis after a car wreck left me with major migraines and no modern medical pills helped alleviate the symptoms. After having tried cannabis a handful of times in high school and college, it was actually a doctor's recommendation that led me to give it another try. Only then did I realize that we'd all been at least a little misled about the health benefits of this amazing plant. And despite an unexpected break because of the vape ban and then a global health crisis, the business is stronger than ever, and we invite you to check out our updated website today. We are still offering our three varieties with new and improved terpene formulations for enhanced flavor to go along with that custom blended terpene effect. Check back at www.awakenvapes.com and be the first online orders of our high-demand Delta 8 cartridges coming in stock here soon. Use the coupon code PODCAST20 at checkout all this month for 20% off your entire order. That's PODCAST20 for 20% off.
Welcome to Awakened Exchanges. We're glad to have you on today.
Yeah, thanks. Happy to be here.
So for those in the audience that may be unfamiliar with you, why don't you tell us your name and a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, my name's Andrew Wiggins, and I guess it depends who's asking. I could be a professional gambler or I could be an entrepreneur. Reality, maybe a little bit of both. You know, over the years, it's kind of ebbed and flowed. Right now, pretty close to 50-50, but kind of trending in the direction of more on the business side.
So how did you first get involved with professional gambling and the fantasy sports side?
Yeah, well, I first started off with poker. I mean, going back to really the poker boom in like 2003 when I was in college, Chris Moneymaker won the main event, and that was on ESPN, and poker was booming. So I got into playing poker in college. And during that time, my friend and I started a business that was kind of similar to what we're doing with Establish a Run, where we were teaching people how to get better at poker. Establish a Run, we're teaching people how to get better at fantasy sports. So at the time, we were recording a screencast, and you know, we were playing online poker, and then we would commentate our thought process, and we would put that up for subscribers, and they would pay a monthly fee. So playing poker, was doing that, and then as that grew, I played less poker and focused more on the business, and then basically it's been so long out of the years, the government at one point shut down online poker. The law that took down online poker had a carve out for fantasy sports in it. So now you could gamble on fantasy sports. However, there had to be 1 day fantasy sports contest. And that's where DraftKings and FanDuel and all of these sites came about. So we knew about that. And at the time we started a site similar to what DraftKings and FanDuel are. It was called Draft Day.
Okay.
Didn't work out in the end. It turned out you had to raise, you know, maybe billions of dollars. I think DraftKings ended up raising about $2 billion. We just, that wasn't really our skill set. But we did that for about 4 years. It was a great learning experience. While I was running it, I realized that people were making a lot of money doing it. So when we sold the business, I started playing professionally. So that was around 2013, 2014. Been playing professionally since then. And then we started Establish the Run last year with just football, where we were teaching people how to play football, and we've since added basketball. So that's kind of a quick recap of the last 20 years of my life for you.
So you got started with the poker, right?
Yep.
Very big into that as well. It was just after college for me when Moneymaker was making it big and all the home games and stuff started. What do you remember about that? What got you sucked in?
Well, I was playing in high school with friends, and I loved it. I just got the bug right away. So I was going to the library and checking out books. I mean, it's just funny looking back on how different things were back then. So I'm reading all the books, David Sklansky, all those ones, you know. But they were mostly geared. Yeah, exactly. They're mostly geared to limit poker back then, because no limit was just starting to catch on. There was the Doyle Brunson Super System book. That was the big one on No Limit Hold'em. Anyway, you know, you can only get so many games in person.
Yeah.
And then I went out to college the next year and I started playing on Party Poker. And that was when everything was just blowing up. Every classroom, people were coming in and writing on the chalkboard their affiliate links so that you could go in and get a deposit bonus. It was insane. And so I just started playing a ton in college. And yeah, I'd like to say I never looked back, but it really wasn't a smooth start. I was probably in over my head playing online, and, you know, I was out partying, so I'd come back and play drunk. And I didn't do very well to start. Lost a decent amount of money. I ended up meeting the person who's now my business partner, and he was just an incredibly talented poker player. And so he kind of helped me out. And maybe within, I don't know, 9 to 12 months was when I started to do well. And then from there, I guess at that point, I didn't quite look back.
So how long were you playing poker exclusively?
Well, so I would have started playing in 2003. We ended up launching our training site called Card Runners in 2005. And I think I played pretty seriously, I guess, probably for about 4 years. And then as Card Runners did better and better, I just had less motivation to play. And, you know, it's stressful playing poker, you know, any type of gambling, especially if you're playing higher stakes, you're going to have a lot of swings. And so I just kind of wasn't as invested in it. And I was just focusing more on the business and maybe focusing more on partying with my friends and such. And Card Runners ended up lasting about 10 years.
Nice.
But after the government shut everything down, which was 2011, I believe, like everything was pretty quick downhill from there.
So were you already involved with the fantasy sports by that point?
We were not. We started it. Oh, wait, no, we were. We had just started building Draft Day at the time. So actually, it was kind of a perfect transition. And the day, you know, funny enough, the day that they shut poker down was on tax day, April 15th. So they call it Black Friday in the poker world. But basically, we just logged on to the sites, PokerStars and Full Tilt Poker one day, and the Department of Justice had seized their websites. And so we thought, yeah, that's probably not a good sign. Although actually at the time, I was so ignorant that I thought, this will probably work out fine. And here we are almost a decade later. And you can play online poker in a few select states in the U.S., but really it has never come back in the United States. Only place in the country, in the world, really, where you can't play online poker.
I was wondering about that, because I know a lot of people were making, you know, fairly decent money at that for a while, and it just kind of dried up instantly. And like you said, the exception for fantasy sports is just on the daily fantasy sports, right?
Exactly, yeah. Well, I guess you could, as long as it's more than one game, you could do it. So you could do it for the whole season too, but you know, it's more of like a gambling type game when you're doing it on a single day, and it can get down to even just two games. So like yesterday there was two football games. So you can run a contest for just those two Monday night football games.
So tell us a little bit more about how you got into Establish the Run. You said you started with this other fantasy company, and then how did that build into that?
Yeah. So they were completely unrelated. The site Draft Day, where we were running games, we ended up losing money, and we weren't going to be able to go out and raise enough and compete with DraftKings. I think at the time they had just closed a $120 million raise, and we thought, okay, you know, it's pretty much game over for us. We had raised about $3 million at the time, and we were running out of cash and didn't have a lot of leads to raise anymore. So we sold it for what we could, which wasn't much, but somebody else took it on. And from there, that's when I just started playing full time. And so fast forward till last year, I mean, we had always talked about maybe doing another business in the space, especially with sports gambling coming online across the country, that gives some opportunities, and it gave the sites more funding. I mean, there was a stretch where DraftKings and FanDuel maybe weren't going to make it because the government was going after them, and they were calling it gambling, and they're trying to shut it down. So there are a bunch of attorney generals across the country going at them. So I've had my share of fights with the government, trying to put me out of work basically over the years. But once that basically they repealed an old law, the Supreme Court did, that allowed sports betting to occur everywhere. And when that happened, we knew we were in good shape, and DraftKings was able to go out and raise a bunch more money. And they've since gone public. And they've got like a $15 or $20 billion market cap at this point, bigger than a lot of the other casinos like MGM and such, which is pretty wild to think about.
That is.
But so we started this site, Establish a Run, where we're just selling information about how to analyze football. That's really where we started. My business partner, the guy that I started Cardinals with, Taylor Cabey, who I've been working with forever, me and him teamed up with two other guys that are just incredibly good fantasy analysts, and they had a big following on Twitter. And it was a great match because they can put out insanely good information, and we could help on the business side. I help on the content side a little bit too, so I kind of get the best of both worlds. And yeah, just start putting out as much high quality football content as we could. And as the company has grown over the last year and a half or so, we knew eventually we wanted to get into basketball. So we brought on some other guys that we thought were top notch basketball analysts. And you know, we weren't planning on having the restart season due to COVID, but that kind of happened. And so we got out a limited product for that. And now, you know, short turnaround, but the regular season's starting again in 2 weeks. So we're ramping up. Yeah. So we didn't get to accomplish everything we wanted to in the off season. Of course, we had a lot of plans, but we're feeling pretty good about the product we're going to put out. So I'm excited for the season to get going.
So before you started back and established the run, I assume you were still playing fantasy sports. Were you focused more on basketball or football personally?
You know, I prefer basketball, but there's more action in football, at least on a given slate. You know, you're turning the money over more in basketball because there's so many, you know, it's every day for 6, 7, 8 months. Whereas football, you're getting like 22 different slates, maybe some more if you're playing some of the smaller slates. But yeah, I would play both. I think I've always been better at basketball, but I've had quite a bit of success in football as well. And it's just because you have more casual players coming in. The biggest problem with football is that there's a lot of good information out there, similar to Establish a Run. There's other sites, and you have an entire week to process the information. So it's not that hard for people to say, join our site and read our content. And by the time Sunday morning rolls around, they're going to have a pretty darn good team. So the edges are a little bit thinner, but you get some more casual guys. So it kind of balances out. Whereas in basketball, you'll have information changing. You know, LeBron gets ruled out a few minutes before the game starts. Well, that changes the entire team. You know, now you have a bunch of players on the team that are going to do much better. So the salaries are not efficient. So you're looking to get those guys that are underpriced. So you got to be able to think quicker and kind of make your own decisions more in basketball, which is great, but you have more of a hardcore audience. So it's a give and take.
So do you do any full season stuff, or are you strictly single game?
I play the full season leagues with my friends that we've been playing for 20 years. Yeah, so plenty of shit talking goes on there and pride and such, but not so much on the money side. And yeah, as I've done better in DFS and I focus more on that, I've kind of put less time into the season long stuff. And so I get a lot of crap from my friends because I haven't done as well as I should in those recently. And they're like, hey, man, aren't you a pro? How are you not making the playoffs in football this year?
Well, yeah, when you're not spending any time on there, there's a little bit of a difference, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I had some bad luck on the injury front this year, too. I mean, it was a crazy year with COVID, and expecting the same with basketball, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised we've actually managed to have a fairly full sports season with either one. So,
well, we joke, you know, with the NFL because they're running all these tests, and somehow nobody's ever positive on Sunday morning. I don't know. You know, I don't know if they're giving them pregnancy tests out there or what. And then you get Monday morning, you get like 50 guys that had been playing in the games the previous day, all of a sudden they're positive. So Hopefully there's a book written on it at some point, because it seems like there's some funny business going on there. But you know what? Kudos to them for getting us to this point in the season. And nobody's gotten seriously hurt from the COVID that I'm aware of, you know, the players or the people on the coaching staff. So I think, you know, it's worked out about as well as you could have hoped.
They definitely are probably a lower end of the risk scale than a lot of the people in the country. So,
yeah, you know, for the most part, yes. But then you worry a little bit about some of these linemen that weigh, you know, 350 pounds. Oh, yeah. And then, of course, you have the coaches. And we saw, like, with Denver recently, all the quarterbacks were together in a room. And so they all had exposure. And then Denver didn't have a quarterback. I'm kind of surprised we didn't see more of that when, you know, people are inside watching film together. I thought maybe entire quarterback rooms would get wiped out a handful of times this year, but so far only once. So fingers crossed that it stays at that.
So, I was actually curious about what your, biggest win was.
Biggest win. Well, I've come they run what they call Millie Makers in daily fantasy, where they're paying out $1 million to first. And years ago, there was only a handful of them. They're special events. And now they run sometimes multiple ones a week. And they also run what they call live finals, where you kind of you win your way into a contest that has less people, maybe 150 or 200 people, and it still has really huge payouts. And that's kind of the easiest way to make easiest in quotes. You know, it's hard to get that seat, and then you're playing against the best players, but much easier than beating, say, 40,000 people in the field.
Yeah.
So I've come close a bunch of times, and I took second in one of the basketball finals for 250K.
Wow.
And what ended up happening was the team that beat me actually had Russell Westbrook, who at the time was credited with the triple-double. And with DraftKings scoring, you get a bonus, an extra 3 points if your player gets a triple-double. And I lost to him by, I think, a point and a half. First thing next morning, they decided that one of the rebounds was a phantom rebound. He did not, in fact, have a triple-double. Of course, at that point, the games have already been paid out. There's nothing I can do about it. But that's kind of my story about coming close to winning $1 million.
Oh, man, that's got to be a little bit heartbreaking.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you kind of learn to deal with that type of stuff, because when you're playing these games, I mean, look, you know, if Westbrook doesn't have that rebound, he knows he doesn't have it. He probably would have found a way to get another rebound, right? So they go both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you consider your worst loss then?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I've had some bad days for sure. And in football, you're putting out more money because it's those 22 slates. So it's a lot more than I would have out in a given day of basketball, for instance. And in the old days, you could hedge out your action a lot more because the games were softer. There weren't as many good players. You didn't have to have the absolute best team and everything. So you could make some swaps. So one guy, you know, so you have more coverage of players. But as the games have gotten more difficult, there really isn't room to do that. You kind of have to put out what you think is the best team, so you're less hedged out and your swings can be bigger. So if you go into a football weekend now and you lose 75%, it can hurt pretty bad. Now, I've been scaling down my action. This is what I think I probably peaked with the amount of action I was putting out maybe 3 years ago or maybe four. And so I keep ratcheting down, whereas 5 years ago, I would never have a day where I lost 75%. And now I can. But I'm playing less. But that doesn't mean it stings any less. You know, Sundays can be pretty brutal days when sometimes you just know right away that you're going to lose, like, everything you put into play. Like, you know, 10 minutes into the games, like, nothing's going your way. And then you kind of just have to sit there and watch the games play out all day long. And it's pretty torturous. So I've tried to play less and less just so that I'm not living through that pain all day on Sunday.
Is there any lessons you've taken to learn from those losses? Are you, like you said, you're ratcheting back a little bit, or is there just go with the flow?
Yeah, I think gambling's been an incredible teacher. Probably the most important thing is just trying to get a better understanding of how variance works and just how, like, I think most people in everyday life don't understand how much luck goes into everything and how just the smallest things can change things immensely. And when you're gambling over and over and over again, you see that, you know, even if you're a 90% favorite or even 95%, like, you lose that a lot, you know, if you're playing an infinite times. And of course you remember the times that you lose. So I think that's been the thing, the most important lesson I've taken from gambling is just understand that there is a lot of luck in everything that goes on. And you just got to learn to roll with the punches.
bad beats are always the thing you tend to remember the most. I know with poker games, for sure. Yeah, you get beat on that river that one time you think you've got it all sealed up, those kind of things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and when I was playing online poker, I'd be playing, I don't know, six or eight tables, and the action is pretty quick. You know, whereas live, you're playing maybe like 30 hands an hour if you're playing at a casino. If you're playing a bunch of tables online, you could play 200, 300, 500 hands an hour potentially. So you just see a lot of crazy things. And then you'll remember those bad beats and say, well, gosh, I'm so unlucky. But if you're playing enough, you're going to see a lot of crazy things. And so that kind of gets beaten into your head over and over the longer you play. And the same thing happens in fantasy sports.
So is there anything in particular that you're looking forward to for the NBA season coming up?
Well, I'm looking forward to see Steph Curry play again. It's been a minute since he's been out there. I was really bummed that Clay got injured again. He's one of my favorite players. And I was kind of just looking forward to them getting back to a little bit of the team that they were pre-Durant. You know, and I knew they weren't going to be exactly the same, but I just enjoyed watching that team play so much. And then once Durant got there, it just kind of felt unfair. So, and it just wasn't the same. So I went from really liking that team to disliking them quite a bit. And I was looking forward to getting back to watching them. And, you know, we'll still get to see Steph, but bummed about Clay. Outside of that, I'm just excited for some basketball to come back. It's just a nice distraction with all the nonsense going on out there, you know?
How often do you get confused for the former NBA player, Andrew Wiggins, at this point?
Yeah, you know, it's funny when you messaged me, I haven't been mistaken for him in a while, but it used to happen a lot. So I had to make sure that you weren't trying to get a hold of the NBA player. And for a while, every time someone was trying to like tweet at him, it would be pretty negative stuff because he hasn't quite lived up to the hype in the NBA, although that seems to have toned down a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I wish he had been a better player in the NBA. I didn't want him to be a superstar because I figured that would kind of, you know, people would only want to talk about that whenever they met me. but I'm hoping maybe he'll be a little bit better this year because he's been pretty terrible for the most part.
Well, he went to CBC for a little while, right? And then is he back in the NBA this year?
He's on Golden State, actually.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yep.
Well, at least he's on a good team for you. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Now, I actually noticed something when I was researching you that you used the handle Makisupa. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how you came about that.
Yeah, it's a fish reference, and I've been a big fan of fish for many years. We started seeing them tail end of high school, 2003, 2004, and then they had their hiatus, and basically my entire time in college, which is pretty poor timing if you ask me, but it's kind of an opportunity for me and my friends to get together every year, so we try and make an outing of it. Even now that, you know, we've kind of all moved away, we used to live in Chicago. But it's an opportunity maybe to meet up in Vegas, or we went to the Gorge a couple years ago, or we were supposed to go to Deer Creek this past summer in Indiana. That, of course, did not happen. But, yeah, absolutely love fish, and I probably waste way too much time listening to them and thinking about the band as a whole.
Oh, there are worse things to do, right? Especially if it gives you an excuse to hang out with your friends once in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my wife would probably prefer I didn't listen to fish at all, but she likes me playing around the house at least.
That's good. So as we're getting a little bit more into this, I was going to ask about some of your earlier influences. What were you thinking about doing before you got into the professional gambling side of things?
You know, and you play this out 100 times, probably 95 of them. I'm a suit, you know, an accountant or something on those lines. I don't know. My dad is in the business world, and I guess I was just going to follow in his footsteps. And I did actually finish my degree in accounting. Hate accounting. I do all the accounting for my businesses. It's literally the worst day of the month. I hate doing that. So yeah, I feel very fortunate that things played out the way that they did. And as I mentioned, you know, I met my now business partner. He was in the frat that I was joining, and at the University of Illinois, you can get into the bars at 19. You can't drink till you're 21, but I was actually 18 when I started going to school there. So I needed an ID just to even get into the bars. And when you rush the frats, they just collect the IDs from all the guys in the frats and then kind of hand them out to the people. So when I joined it, I went back to him. I said, hey, you know, can I get one of your IDs? Can we go, you know, we'll get you a new one and I can have your old one. He said, sure. When I walked in to meet him, he was playing online poker. And so the rest is kind of history there. And he ended up being one of the best no limit hold'em. I would say he probably was the best heads up no limit hold'em player in the world for maybe like a 6 month time frame. So, I mean, this is, we're talking about an incredibly talented poker player. So yeah, I mean, it's just like, you look back and think, if I joined a different brand or whatever, I would have had a completely different life.
Very interesting. What current projects are you focusing on at this point? Is it just getting ready for the NBA right now?
Well, my wife and I just had a daughter, so that's kind of the main project we're working on right now. Thanks. And we have a son who's a little over a year and a half, so it's a bit chaotic at home right now. Our daughter Willow is she'll be a month old in a couple of days here.
Wow.
So. So that's been fantastic. But not getting a lot of sleep. And then on top of that, you know, we're in the middle of football season and we're trying to get this NBA product launched. So it's been crazy, but it's been fun. So I guess on a business standpoint, you know, it's just the main focus is getting this NBA product rolled out. And we are adding a bunch of features from the restart, projections and such. And so just trying to get that in order. And then once, you know, the NBA season starts rolling, it's, you know, those are the games that are every day and we're putting up content every day. So it's going to be kind of a little bit overwhelming probably, but I'm looking forward to it.
And what's the biggest challenge that you guys have had to overcome in this last year?
I mean, it's got to be COVID, right? Nobody really saw that one coming, and it's completely upended everything.
Has it changed how much business you guys have been doing?
Not really. You know, we've been really lucky because the sports have all ended up playing. Of course, you know, they were suspended, but we weren't running the NBA product at the time, and I was playing. But I didn't, you know, it was fine. I could just take a break. And it was kind of nice to not gamble at all for 6 months or whatever it was. And when it came back, you know, people wanted to watch football and football has gone off without a hitch. You know, a lot of people were concerned and we had a policy, look, you know, if the games don't end up getting played, we're going to give you your content at some point. And that hasn't come into play yet, thankfully. So yeah, I mean, we've been very blessed as far as not really being impacted negatively by it. And my wife was a teacher, but she's been stay at home since we had our first kid and we're up in the mountains in Colorado. So, you know, it's like we can get outside. We're not really packed in. And we moved here 2 years ago after living in downtown Chicago for 10 years. So, I mean, I'm definitely really glad that we're not in Chicago right now. You know, they weren't even letting people go to the parks for a while. I don't know what the current status is, but my friends back home with kids, you know, they're pulling their hair out with the kids just bouncing off the walls. And yeah. So, I mean, it's been a crazy year for sure. Hopefully we're getting towards the end here. And at the end of the day, I'm just trying to use it as a reset just to make sure that I remind myself of all the things that I need to be thankful of and try and instill some better habits. You know, kind of everyone jumped into that right when it happened. I'm going to learn a new instrument, et cetera, et cetera. Like I was learning music theory for the first month and a half of COVID. And then it just dropped off. I've been playing guitar like crappily I don't know, since high school, so 20 years. And I keep saying I'm going to learn the actual theory behind it and never do. But yeah, man, just trying to get through this year and hoping when things can get back to normal kind of soon.
I know. So here in Portland, we're back on level one lockdowns at this point, and everything's surging and closing down around us. And it's been weird not able to go out on a hike when I'm, you know, 10 minutes from Multnomah Falls and things like that. Then there's been a lot
They've closed down the trails and everything too.
For the most part, they had opened back up and now everything's closing back down again. So it's, definitely
a weird crazy experience. To me.
Right. Outside.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what I wish that the one thing that I, you know, and it's like, it's hard to critique everything because first of all, we don't have all the information. Secondly, I can understand why people have reacted the way they have. But the one thing that I think was really a layup that has been missed is why aren't we suggesting that people one, get in as best shape as they can and two, get outside and get as much sunshine as they can. When you're shutting down parks and hiking and all that, like, it seems really bad. I mean, there's not much evidence that people can get it outside and we know that vitamin D is really good at fighting it. So I wish that we had used this as an opportunity to get healthier as a nation. It doesn't seem like that's occurred. And when you've got, I don't know, what's 60% of the country is obese. It's really frustrating. And you know, it's hard to fight a virus. Your immune system is not going to be good when you're not in shape. So I don't know. It seems like a missed opportunity there.
I definitely agree. There's been so little talk about immune health and all the things that we could be doing to improve ourselves and be less susceptible if we were to get the disease. Like, I get the feeling that I do enough running and I stay active enough. If I were to get it, it'd probably be a pretty bad cold, but that would be, you know, the extent of it. I'd be more about worried about passing it on to others. And yep. If we were a little bit healthier, maybe we could make those choices for ourselves a little bit.
Yeah, I was out. So I've been trying to do more sunbathing just to make sure I'm getting good vitamin D during the heart of the day. And my wife's friend came over the other day to drop off some presents for the baby. And I didn't know she was coming. And, you know, the dog starts barking. I just come walking around. I'm wearing short shorts, no shirt, you know, the middle of winter at like noon on a Tuesday. Just look like a crazy person out there. But
Colorado,
I think getting that sunshine is important.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about Colorado is people think that it's pretty cold out here, but it's actually really, really mild in the winter because the sunshine, it's sunny every day and the sun is really warm. I mean, I'm up at 7,500 feet. So it's warmer than like being down at sea level. And yeah, so it could be like 45 and you could be wearing shorts if you're in the sun. It's nothing at all like the Midwest, which is, oh man, I just hated those Chicago winters.
I can imagine. I've lived in the South. I've lived in the West Coast. I have not lived through a Midwest winter though. So
it's rough, man.
Is there anything that you wish you had known 10 years ago that you would have changed how you've done things these last few?
Yeah. I mean, I think 10 years ago, I mean, it's like so much has changed for me in 10 years, but really the main thing, like just understanding that reality maybe isn't so rigid. You know, I'm not exactly sure what it is, but at a bare minimum, you know, the way that you interact with other people and just your environment, like that shapes how you perceive reality. And so I think I've focused a lot on that over the last 10 years, and that wasn't something that was really on my radar back then. So, you know, I don't know how far to actually take that. You know, if you start looking at like Neville Goddard stuff or whatever, mm-hmm. how much reality are you really creating? I don't know, but so it's certainly just the interactions you have with your environment change everything.
So is there a way that you would handle yourself differently or the businesses, or do you think you would still be going down a similar path at this point?
Well, in my early 20s, I had so much success that I don't think I was pushing myself as much as I should. Just everything came very easy. There's the poker where mm-hmm. the games were you just didn't have to be that good of a poker player because the games were so good at the time. And nobody really understood how to play poker back then. I mean, the game has evolved so much since then. I couldn't, even having been a former professional player, if I sat down in a game now, I'd get absolutely killed because I don't play much anymore.
I can still beat my friends, but that's about as far as I get.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I've done well in our Poker Bros COVID league, you know, but yeah. If I'm playing anyone that's serious, it's game over. So yeah, I think I just took a lot of things for granted. And then really it was probably draft day when draft day failed. You know, I just kind of assumed that was going to be a success because everything we had done up to that point had gone very well. So that was a wake up moment for me. And I think an important one. And from there, you know, when I was able to do fantasy sports professionally, it was like a second chance. And for that to have already gone through it with poker and to get it again with a new game that was just starting up and the games were once again, very, very soft at the beginning there. But to know that the second time through, I had to take it completely seriously and do everything I could to put myself at the top. Cause you know, in like these gambling worlds, it's a lot of young people. There's a lot of partying, you know, money, people start having money. So they're going to clubs and all kind of, you know, all the trappings that you can imagine. Oh, yeah. And I was part of that with the poker stuff. But when I came through it the second time, I really gave it my all. So I had no regrets about how I was approaching it. And I ended up being very successful and it's put me in a great position going forward. So, I mean, again, you talk about luck, like to get that second opportunity. I mean, like what are the odds of that?
I think that, there's some luck that we can't change, but how you handle the situations also helps make your own luck along the way too. So it says a lot about you.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, but that's absolutely true. But yeah, still a lot of things have gone my way. So, and even to be able to come to those realizations, you know, I've had time to explore a lot of ideas and different things that I think have helped me come to this point. And again, it's just to have that path, whereas, you know, maybe, if I'm working 60 hours a week for a big four accounting firm, yeah, it would be interesting to kind of peek through the door of that alternate universe and see what my life is like there. It's, I think, quite a bit different than the one I'm living right now.
So I was going to ask what the best compliment you've ever received, professional, I guess.
Professional, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think really, it's just when people are enjoying the products that we're putting out. I mean, and the great thing about selling information for gambling is when people win big scores, and sometimes people have won life-changing money, with not entirely because of us, but we've played a role in that.
Yeah.
So, that's always really cool. And when you can see someone get something that will actually change the course of their life. And if they win, you can win six figures, you can win $1 million. Like, there's real money to be made, even for people that are playing casually. So that's pretty cool. And I think on a personal level, my in-laws were here for a month this past month. And when they were leaving, they were just telling my wife and I that, of course, it's a grain of salt because you're in-laws, but they're telling us that they thought we were doing a really great job raising the kids. And to me, that I think is the most important thing that I'm focusing on right now, just trying to be a good dad and just be present with the people around me.
I think that's something that most kids don't see in their lives. So you taking that time right now, resetting your boundaries, resetting your life to where you can do all these professional things as well as keeping your personal life on track is very cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's a struggle, of course, just Twitter. Like, I'm trying to break my Twitter addiction, and it's bad. It's like, I can go a few days sometimes without using it, but then I'm always saying, well, I need it for work, which I do. And so you start making these excuses, and you just, you end up, God, if you're tracking the time I spent on Twitter, I'm sure there's plenty of days where it's like 3, 4 hours, 5 hours. I don't know. I finally got to the point with my phone where I deleted the app. And so then I'm just going in and typing it into my browser, right? So now I've gone into the parental settings and I've banned Twitter from my phone. So that's actually helped. I've not been able to go on Twitter on my phone for a while. But it's bad, man. And I've been trying to read more, and I'm doing a reading bet with one of my buddies right now, where basically we just have to read half an hour a day. And if you don't, in the end, you got to pay the other guy a couple $100. But it's amazing, you change that time you're spending on Twitter just aimlessly scrolling to actually reading books. And it's like, I've read 2 books in the last 10 days and I hadn't read a book in 6 months. And it's like, man, I can spend my time better than on Twitter. I know that for certain.
I had a period where I was reading, 3 or 5 books a week. And now I get maybe 3 or 5 a year. And I feel you there. It's definitely a change in habits. Is there something that you like to geek out about, something you like to read or really catches your interest?
I don't know. I go through phases. I'm mostly reading fiction stuff now. I just read a book called The Overstory, which I thought was really fantastic. And it's really about trees and relationships, and just kind of weaves together these different stories and with a lot of depth. So I recommend that one. And then I just read The Bitcoin Billionaires, which is about the Winklevoss twins. And that was a really easy read. And I kind of knew the story anyway, but it was fun kind of with crypto going nuts right now. And being talk about it's like Twitter goes from being 100% Trump to now it's 100% Bitcoin. it's funny kind of watching the ebbs and flows on Twitter. But yeah, I mean, as far as stuff I geek out about, I think like music is my main passion really. And when everything's normal, I'm going to tons and tons of live shows, and I live 15 minutes from Red Rock. So I'm going there like once a week in the summer, and freaking love that. And so not having shows this year was, it's a big time bummer. But I did buy a record player at the start of COVID. So I've been listening to a lot of vinyl, collecting records. And so that's been, I guess, a fun diversion. It's gotten me to listen to some other stuff, because I was mostly listening to live music, Fish, Grateful Dead, Billy Strings. But now with the record player, I'm buying actual records. And so I'm listening to a lot of country lately and just stuff I wasn't listening to as much before. So that's been a fun experiment.
So obviously you mentioned Fish. What other live shows really stand out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the best up and coming guy right now is this guy called Billy Strings, and he's a bluegrass player, but it's like jam grass, and he does a bunch of covers. So it's probably, if you go to one of his shows, it's maybe like 50% of his music, 25% traditional bluegrass, and then 25% covers, and he'll do all kinds of fun stuff. And I think, outside of Fish, that's probably the number two show I would want to see. And he's a little bit smaller too. So that's nice. Yeah, man, I like all kinds of live music, really anything. I'm fiending to get back to any show at this point.
Any favorite shows besides Fish or anyone?
I like going to see Dead & Company, just because, not that the music is as top notch as it could be, because I don't think it necessarily is, but the vibe that you get at those shows, I think is really unparalleled. Just, you know, people are so excited to be there, and they'll come up and play two shows in Boulder. And so you got 40,000 deadheads there, you know, taking over the town. Everyone's wearing tie dye, going around high five, and all the bars are playing dead music. And it's just, you know, it's, there's a sense of community and just positive energy that you can really just feel in the air. And so, I just miss that. You know, it's like, I grew up religious. I'm not religious now, but I think when I'm going to live music events like that, that's kind of been a religious experience for me.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, so it's just been a big hole not having that.
It's a big culture. It's, the community of people all sharing that same music, that same event, it just brings that different energy to it. I can definitely feel that.
Yeah. And Red Rocks in particular, I mean, everybody loves playing there. Everybody loves being there. So the bands are always bringing their best. And a lot of people travel in from out of town to go to shows there. And, you know, just the scenery is unbelievable. So I've gone there a few times just to hike around, like with my son. And it's just like, man, what a bummer that we can't see any music here for a while. But I'm hoping, you know, at least that's an outdoor venue. So I think, you know, by next summer, I feel pretty confident with the vax and everything coming that they should at least have some shows there. I freaking hope so.
I'm hopeful, if not confident. I'd like to think that they're going to get their act together and we can get enough people vaccinated. We can do some outdoor activities, but I don't know how they're going to handle that yet.
Yeah, it remains to be seen.
So as we're getting a little bit farther into this, there's a segment I like to do called the Moment of Vulnerability. And it's just a little bit of randomness on there. It's a little bit more personal. What motivates you in life?
I think at this point, just like I was saying, just being a good dad, just trying to give my kids every opportunity to succeed and be happy. And I think if I can instill some of the things that I've come across in the last decade to them, you know, get them meditating early, get them exercising, you know, spending a ton of time outside. My son already just absolutely loves being outside, which brings so much joy to me to watch him just wanting to be out in the woods and playing around. And, you know, that was a big reason we moved out to Colorado, because we wanted to have some land to raise our family with. And
yeah.
So that's paying off in spades so far. But yeah, I mean, just trying to focus on that. And like I said, just trying to work on being present, because sometimes I'm good at it. Most of the times I'm really terrible at it. And I think there's progress that I see, but it's, you know, two steps forward, one step back type of thing. And so if I can ever get to the point where I'm actually like always focused on that and always making it a priority, that would be pretty great. So just trying to move in that direction.
Definitely seems like you are. Do you consider your childhood one that you want to emulate for your kids?
Yeah, I had a really good childhood. I was the oldest of three boys, and really, you know, it was great. My parents were there for me. They gave me every opportunity to do whatever I wanted. I think, you know, looking back, maybe there was a little bit of religious fundamentalism that was injected and kind of got worse over the years. But at the same time, I'm thankful for that, to have that background. I think there's a lot of valuable stuff in religion, especially in the Catholic tradition. I think there's a lot of good stuff. I think the Gospels and the message that Jesus was teaching is incredible. I think it's muddied up a little bit by the way the organization handles it.
Absolutely.
But I want my kids to have the opportunity to explore that. And I'm glad I have that base. But yeah, I mean, I think I had a very blessed childhood.
I was raised by a lapsed Catholic as well. So the having that history there kind of gives me a weird appreciation of it. I just don't see a lot of people doing the do unto others as you would have them do unto you part. That's the part I think gets lost in a lot of Christianity lately.
Yeah, I heard you mention Joseph Campbell in the Hinton interview, and I actually just finally got around to watching The Power of Myth. I'd heard a lot about Campbell, and I'd never actually dove into his stuff. And over the last couple of weeks, I watched the PBS special, The Power of Myth. And man, I can't recommend that enough. I just thought it was fantastic. And there's a lot of ideas I'd thought about in the past, but the way he kind of summarized it and put it all together, I mean, that guy was onto some stuff right there.
Really was. In fact, that whole series is one of my favorites. I wish I had a copy of it. I think I catch it whenever it shows back up on Prime or whatever. But
Yeah. I had to buy it, but it was only $10. So hopefully I bought it and not rented it, because I definitely want to go back and watch it again.
He's definitely him and Jordan Peterson studied with him a lot, and they have that same, the myth, the mythology. It's very interesting to think about.
Yeah, Jordan Peterson. Obviously I've heard interviews of him. I didn't read his book. I read the Blinkist of it, which probably, you know, lost some of it, but my dad really liked that book. And, which is funny because I actually don't agree with my dad on a lot of philosophical stuff, but Peterson, you know, I think he really gets a bad rap from what I've gathered. I think the people that are really hating on him aren't actually listening to what he's saying, which I guess is a pretty common thing that occurs in today's society. But man, I know he's got a new book coming. I mean, what's the deal with him? He had the drug issues. I mean, hopefully he's doing all right. It seemed like he hit some pretty hard times there for a while.
So from my understanding, the book is a follow-up on the 12 Rules of Life book. His wife was diagnosed with terminal cancer, which she has somehow managed to beat. During that, he was put on some, benzodiazepine kind of stuff, and had an adverse reaction that basically he's been spending a year and a half or something trying to get out of. Most of the people got upset with him. I want to say it's because of him trying to talk about a law that was going into effect in Canada, which would regulate how people were allowed to speak about other people. So he was talking about it in terms of fascism, whereas people portrayed it as transphobia.
Yeah.
And so he was trying to get people to think larger term, bigger scale, zoom out a little bit, and you're controlling what people are saying. But everybody was so concerned about which pronouns they were using that the message gets lost.
Yeah, and I think even beyond that, I mean, they just kind of attacked everything he was saying, and they were just trying to turn it into sound bites. But I heard him, you know, on Rogan a few times and some long form interviews, and I just don't think that he was getting a fair shake in everything there.
Agreed. So you told me what motivates you. So what about what scares you in life?
Well, I think, you know, and I hate to keep going back to like the dad and the kids and stuff, but really, you know, I've lived a pretty full life, and I don't know, I'm not so concerned about what would happen to me at this point. It's really, I would just be concerned, like, would something bad happen to my kids? Cause that's one of the things about being a parent is that a lot of it's out of your control, and you can just see how quickly something could go awry. And so, yeah, I mean, the thought will cross my mind at times, or, you know, like where the kids almost like tumble down a hill or something, and you grab them at the last second, you're like, geez, you know, what if I hadn't been right there? And then he goes down and whacks his head really hard or something. So those are the types of thoughts. And, you know, and just, I guess if something did happen to me, what type of impact that would have on the people around me. But, I don't know. Yeah. I just, like I said earlier, I try and just roll with the punches. So I'm not too worried about the things that have come down the pipeline. And right now with everything that's happening in the world, I think a lot of people are probably really concerned. And I kind of went through a phase and back like around the first financial crash where I got into a really dark place, and you get into the conspiracies and you get into the, monetary system's going to collapse, et cetera, et cetera. And it was not good. And, you know, I think through that, I kind of understood that, well, first of all, we'd have no idea what's going to happen. Cause I was convinced in 2009 or whatever, that everything was going to collapse. And here we are, you know, we had a decade where everything went very well for the most part. So just try not to worry about it and take it as it comes, really.
Well, I was going to ask what you do to get over those things, but that's what it sounds like. You just roll with the punches.
And I think, you know, when I'm meditating regularly, that's very helpful. And I'll go like a month where I meditate every day, and then I'll go like 3 months where I don't meditate at all. So that's kind of what I'm saying, where I can't get these habits to stick, but I'm hopeful that eventually they will. And I have a float tank in my basement, which I've not been using.
What?
I know, man. I was using it all the time. And then just like, I've been busy and like I feel bad with the baby, like, oh, hey, honey, I'm going to go, float for an hour and a half. Like, it's just, you know, so I think once my daughter's a little bit older, I'll get back in there. But man, I'm using that thing regularly, that's when everything's really clicking. Cause it's, so you've floated before?
I've only got to do one, and I would love to do it on a regular basis. The amount that you can think about in an hour and a half in a float tank is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I always liken it to, it's like doing psychedelic, like a light dose of psychedelics. You get a lot of the same positives out of it, where you just come out, you got a smile on your face, the colors are brighter, you're more present, your worries just melt away to an extent. So yeah, I mean, I think I can't recommend it enough. If anyone out there listening has access to a float tank in most major cities. Like they're pretty much everywhere now. I would highly recommend getting in to do it. And if you did it once and you liked it, you would love it if you could do it more frequently because it just builds on itself.
I almost got this summer, I was going to go in and do a membership, but they'd closed them all down basically even after things were reopening. So hopefully next year we'll get around to that one of these days.
Yeah, that's probably just one of these businesses that's going to get hit pretty hard from COVID. You can't stay open and now they got to go through another winter. It's freaking brutal, man. My heart goes out to all the small business owners because I've been there in spots where my business is failing and it's just such a helpless feeling. And even in those spots, it was really on me and this to have it completely out of your control. It breaks my heart to even think about it.
So many small businesses across the country, there's no real help that's come through. It's been, May was the last time when they really did anything for the stimulus. And with the new surge, I'm really concerned about restaurants again. There's so many restaurants who barely hung on through that first round. And I don't know if they're going to make it through winter.
I mean, I think it could be as high as like 75% of restaurants turnover. And, it's just like the shot that we're taking. The culture in America already has been on a terrible downward trajectory. And now it's like, music venues are going to be closing. Restaurants are going to be closing. Art venues, whatever. I hope you like Amazon and Chipotle, man.
sad existence. But, it could be worse. Let's hope we can build it back strong, right?
I mean, I'm really optimistic overall. I as long as we can take some lessons from this and look, this could have been a lot worse. Thank God that this pandemic does not impact young people and children. Imagine what we'd be doing right now if it was, because usually the tales are similar to really young and old people. And so if it was hitting young people, babies, like it is old people, I mean, holy shit, man. So hopefully we'll learn some lessons here because there will be something down the line. We've been very lucky that we haven't had something like this in a long time. So fingers crossed that we can put in some, implement some strategies for the next one.
Well, that's what people forget. The 1918-1919 flu was all about the young, healthy soldiers were the ones that were getting killed. It was it would attack healthy immune systems. So all the people that were dying were in their 20s and 30s. Changed a generation completely, and we could have ended up with the same thing.
Yep. And it probably will come at some point in our lifetimes. We're too connected, and people's immune systems suck and et cetera, et cetera. We were very lucky to go this long without one.
Agreed. So, I have a feeling it might be your kids, but, I was curious about a game changing moment in your life.
Yeah, you could probably say that, man, that it's crazy, crazy moment just to watch a child being born and then to watch them grow up, so it's not just a singular moment, but the whole thing. It's funny looking back because, it was my son's 18 months old, I think, or no, he's what, 19 months old. It hasn't been that long, but just trying to even think back before we had him and now with my daughter, it's like life is so much different. And it's super rewarding just to have someone else to live for and then just try and give them every opportunity to be as successful as possible. I mean, I just want to do what I have to do to help them basically at this point.
Is there something you'd like to pass on to them if you could? Some bit of knowledge?
Yeah, I mean, I guess one takeaway from this interview is I just try and keep things pretty simple. Just be present, man. That's the main one. And I think so many problems in our society stem from that. And it's like you go out and you're hanging out with everyone, and I'm certainly guilty of it, and everyone's on their phone. And even if you can get, sometimes a lot of my friends are pretty good about it, and me as well. And you'll get an hour or 2 hours and there's no phone. But then all of a sudden, oh yeah, I got to see what I've missed. And all of a sudden you look around, everybody's on the phone.
And you got 10 minutes that no one's looking up. They're just all down there. Yeah. I feel you.
So it makes me sad. And so and the social media stuff worries me a lot. So I don't know, this poor kid's probably, both of them, they're not going to have phones or on social media till they're 20 years old. But yeah, I think just try and get them to love being outdoors and doing physical activities with other people, just the things that we used to do when we were kids. And I think we were really blessed that we were able to see both sides of the coin. My youngest brother is 10 years younger than me, and he doesn't really know a world without smartphones and the internet and such. And I didn't have a cell phone until till college.
I didn't either.
It might even been like halfway through college. And you know, they weren't really, it was like a phone back then. It was, you're doing T9 texting.
I was going to say.
Yeah. So, and you know, I can remember like traveling around, like I studied abroad, and having to like print out a map and trying to like find your way around, you know, or you're telling somebody, hey, I'm going to meet you at this spot at this time. You better freaking be there or we're not meeting. And so I think, you know, it kind of makes me a little bit sad that some of that is lost, because there's something about exploring and just trying to figure things out on your own that maybe kids aren't doing now.
I was going to say, I was in a family that was an early adopter of the internet, been online since probably 93, 94. But even online then was so much different than it is now. The social media aspect just didn't exist. And it's weird to see people who've never had a device not be in front of them their whole lives, basically. It's
We had AOL. You know, I can remember like going, like finding the Sports Illustrated pictures and then watching them like slowly download across the screen, you know, like load up bit by bit.
30 seconds for a JPEG. I mean, come on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just to add to that question too, I think, you know, one of the things you see with kids is just their sense of wonder and awe about everything. You know, everything is so cool to them. And so one, I'm trying to have more of that in my life, but really I want to just encourage them to have a sense of awe and wonder about everything, because it's just so easy to get used to things like a beautiful sunrise and just take it for granted. And it sounds corny, right? But if you can get to the point where you're really taking that in every time, like that's the way that we should be living.
Agreed. So many people don't take any time during their day to appreciate the world that's around them. You get into traffic and that's all you think about is just the traffic.
Yeah. And some of it depends where you're driving to. Like when I was in Chicago, I was not a big fan of driving around, but here we're like 20 minutes, 30 minutes from everything. But they're beautiful drives. And it's like, you know, you roll the windows down, crank the music up a little bit, and I actually really enjoy it.
Is there anything that I should have asked you that I haven't asked yet or didn't think to?
I don't think so, man. No, it's been fun. When I was looking at those, the questions of, you know, like what motivates you and such, we were just conducting some interviews for Established Run last week. And, one of my associates was conducting the interview and I had not been on one with him before. And he was asking these questions and I'm thinking, dang, that'd be kind of tough on the spot. So I'm glad you sent me the document beforehand so I could think about it a little bit and not be blindsided. But these poor guys we were interviewing had to say what motivated them, et cetera. I mean, I guess those are kind of common interview questions, but
how often do you really think about it? Yeah. I mean,
exactly. Yeah.
Well, all right. Well then one last one for you. Any personal philosophies on life?
I mean, we kind of covered it. It's just, you know,
keep it simple.
Stay present. Try and have a sense of awe. Just treat other people with respect and dignity, and especially in the world that we live in today where everyone's so angry all the time, and just understand that like most things aren't nearly as big of a deal as you think they are. I think, you know, thank God Trump's gone, just because it put everyone on so much edge, you know, and everyone was acting like everything was the end of the world, and I just couldn't deal with it anymore.
Yeah, it was just not good.
Yeah, so, you know, get out and vote, of course, but like probably don't have politics as part of your life, like stuff like that. Just try and be a happy, pleasant person. I think we need more of that in the world right now.
Any last words or personal shout outs?
No, I mean, if you guys are interested in fantasy sports, you can come over to Establish a Run. Twitter, I'm at Andrew Wiggins. Don't really tweet a whole lot, but if you want to send me a DM or anything, they're open. I'm happy to chat. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for coming on today. We really appreciate having you.
Yeah, it's fun. Thanks for having me.
Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. It was a genuine pleasure to speak with Andrew. I want to thank him and also give a special thanks to all of our listeners. You are the reason I'm doing this. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe to us on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you're listening, and please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Every podcast says it because it really does help spread the word. You can also support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter. Thanks again, and have a blessed day.